this is Dave Douglas, and this is the Greenleaf Music Podcast, A Noise from the Deep. This is a very special episode with the drummer and composer, Marijke Wiening. Marijke has made a beautiful new album coming out on Greenleaf Music in October 2019, and we will hear some of that music here. The album is called Metropolis Paradise. We talk about her mentorships with Stefan Harris and Guillermo Klein, about her path into the music in New York. Marijke also talks about composing from the drum set and lots more. So thanks for your emails about this show at podcast@greenleafmusic.com. And please support all the artists at Greenleaf by joining us as a subscriber for a mere $75 a year. That's basically $6.25 a month. Okay, basically $1.50 a week. You can hear the entire catalog. That's everything, including a lot of exclusive music, only for subscribers. So if you like Rudy Royston, Joe Lovano, Linda O, Donnie McCaslin, Ryan Keberly, Greg Ward, my own music, the whole team here, please help us out in this new model by signing up at greenleafmusic.com. We appreciate the support, so enjoy the show. Marijke Wiening. Marijke Wiening, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have this record on Greenleaf Music. We're really proud, and the music is wonderful.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm super excited to put it out on Greenleaf.
So the track we heard is called Free Time, and just tell us who the band is.
It's Dan Tepfer on piano, Rich Perry on saxophone, Alex Goodman on guitar, and Johannes Felcher on bass.
And you told me that in your band, it's normally Glenn Zaleski, but he broke his elbow 5 days before the recording session.
Yep.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, it was an intense 5 days. It was pretty crazy. I actually considered rescheduling the whole session, but then also Systems 2 was going to close. So, and I knew that we're going to be the very last recording. So they literally closed like after our last song. And so there was no option really to reschedule. And also for me, it was a big, big dream of recording with my band at Systems 2, actually. So I really wanted to make it work.
Was it Joe Marciano or Mike Marciano, the engineer?
Max Ross.
Max Ross, okay.
Yeah, but everyone was there the whole time.
Right.
They were also packing up. Yeah. I know.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and Nancy was there the whole time.
Yeah.
So they were kind of packing up everything while we were recording. Different people came in and out to say bye and to buy some microphones and some gear they were selling.
Hopefully they weren't like buying the microphones that you guys were using while the session was happening.
Exactly.
Can I take that cable too? Are you using that?
I know. But it was kind of funny because like in between songs, sometimes people would come in and like look at the microphone, you know, or like...
Wow.
Yeah, it was
what happened to that piano? I remember they had a classic Steinway Grand.
They sold it as
well. They sold it.
Yeah, they sold it, I think, to some, I don't know, company or some, I can't remember, but they sold actually everything. The drums, they sold to Jonathan Blake, I believe.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah, it was intense.
I'm overdue to invite him to come talk to me on this
podcast. Would be interesting.
I would hope to be able to get him someday.
Yeah.
But back to this piano situation, it sounds like Dan Tepfer stepped in, and I wrote to him about this. And he said it was just so last minute, it was a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But he obviously learned it.
Totally.
Sounds great.
Yeah, we had a long rehearsal, and he learned. I was really scared, of course. I mean, as you are, if you know that your piano player won't be able to play, and you like been planning on this recording for so long, and we played
shows. I'm sure Glenn was so disappointed. Also,
he was so sad. Yeah, I mean, yeah, really, it was crazy those days before the recording. And I was so happy that Dan was in town and had time and said yes, and he can prepare and he has time for a rehearsal. And yeah, I think it was amazing to have him. And
well, and it sounds like a band. So, but you know, the fact that it can sound like a band when there's one person who was just plugged in at the last minute is also a testament to your writing and band leading.
Yeah, I guess so. And Dan was also really into the music. He really liked it. And so I think it was just a lucky coincidence, and like really was so happy that actually this happened also in a way, because I mean, you know, you're in a situation and you don't know what's going to happen. Like you planned all of that, you're spending the money, and yeah, it could have gone the other direction as well, you know, so.
I don't think so. Anyway, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds pretty natural and
Thank
organic.
You. Yeah.
And you mentioned to me that Stefan Harris was an influence for you as someone who sort of pushed you to be a band leader.
Totally. Yeah.
And so I would imagine that some of that guidance gave you the vision to be able to put a band like this together and have them play your music.
Yeah.
And write music that is playable. I don't want to come off wrong. It sounds easy.
It is,
and I
but
guess
actually,
what I mean is it sounds playable.
Yeah.
And so,
but
even
everyone
though,
so far told me it's pretty hard to play.
Yeah. No, there's clearly bumps in the road and there's challenges to it. But I mean in the way that it's being played, it sounds like it's flowing.
Yeah.
Like everyone's comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, and Stefan was, I mean, he was a big influence totally on bringing me to being a band leader, because I was always interested in composing and yeah, but I don't know, being a drummer, obviously you don't have this access sometimes to like harmonic knowledge and in school, I mean, of course you're learning all of that, but you can't use it in a band setting, obviously, because you're sitting on the drums and not on a harmonic instrument. So I always had a hard time to kind of putting that together, the drums and like harmonies, and Stefan's approach really helped me, because his approach is really having feelings and a mood as a bass, and he has this whole concept. It's really amazing, and it was like a aha effect for me. So when we worked on that and we kind of developed some different ideas and concepts, I was like, okay, wow, this is amazing.
You mean ideas and concepts related to how you would get your music expressed and share it with a band?
Yeah, and how I would actually start composing and...
Like how to begin a piece.
Yeah, and how to get ideas.
And maybe working from feelings. You said something about the feeling.
Yeah. I mean, also his way of like ear training, he does the same. It's really related to feelings and emotions. So it's not really on a theoretical component, but really based on, okay, you close your eyes and you have this different gestures. Actually, when he plays a chord, you have different gestures for ear training in order to show what chord it is or what chord structure it is. And that was so interesting for me to have this coming from this direction, because that's really, this is really how I write now and compose all the music to.
That must have been very different from the education you were getting in Europe.
Oh, totally.
You told me you're from Nuremberg. You spent a lot of time growing up in Norway, and then you went to the conservatory in Mannheim, and then did a transfer to Copenhagen.
I did a year exchange
in Copenhagen at the Rhythmic Academy. Is that what they?
A conservatory.
Yeah. And only after that did you come to New York. So I would imagine that, I mean, I know that the European conservatory system is much more. You know, tied to technique and the textbook way of learning harmony and not so much like, what face do you make when I play this chord?
Totally. Yeah, exactly. So that's why I really had a hard time approaching this, you know, because I knew, but it was all so theoretically, and it was, nothing that I could grab in a way. And meeting Stefan and working with him, it was really like, okay, this is like a whole new world for me that opened up. And yeah, and since then, I mean, I love composing.
But since we're on this topic, you also mentioned that Guillermo Klein has been really important for you.
Yeah, that was after school, really. Mm-hmm. I met him through a workshop. He does those workshops sometimes at iBeam in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. where you meet one day for a whole month, like every week. So it's, I think, like one Sunday for a whole month. Mm-hmm. And then you go through different ideas and concepts of Guillermo, and you're working with in a band. So you have like from one week to the other, you always have assignments, mm-hmm. and you kind of share it with the group and get input and ideas and feedback.
Great.
And after that, I still do privately with him. Mm-hmm. So we meet every couple of months or weeks. Mm. And it's so interesting because he also has like his own concept. It's very emotion based in a mm-hmm. way. It's like really pure and like his way of approaching music and not theoretical at all. It's really like, again, from a emotion standpoint or mm-hmm. yeah. And so it's
but
been
it
great.
Also sounds like in both cases, you know, beginning from something simple that's based on a true feeling or mm-hmm. or maybe emotion is the wrong, but you know, a true sense of something
yeah.
in the world, something real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then you
and
have
writing
that
from there.
Exactly, and then you, I mean, I all the songs they really started from a small idea or like some harmonic like structures, and then kind of developed. I mean, I'm a slow writer, and I always need time in between when I write a song to kind of step out and get an objective point of view. And then I sometimes put it into Sibelius and then play along on the drums mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and see how it feels. And I change small things. Or mm-hmm. some of the songs I even finished in the train going from Berlin south to Munich. It's like a 4 or 5 hour train ride. Mm-hmm. And I just listen to what I wrote or some ideas that I recorded. And then from there, I take it and develop it.
Do you ride in the first class car when you take that?
No, actually in Germany, second class is
very
good.
You're in second class.
Yeah, you also have Wi-Fi and it's very nice. Yeah.
I like those trains.
Yeah. High-speed trains.
So you get a lot of work done
mm-hmm.
on the train.
Yeah, I like working on the train.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
So I want to ask about a specific piece, but first just... since we're talking about the record and systems too, who was the producer? Did you produce it yourself?
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah.
So you kind of, as far as the sounds and all of that, you had done enough recording that you sort of knew what you wanted.
Yeah. I mean, I worked on the tunes, of course, in a kind of producing way with Guillermo before the record. Because originally the idea was to have him coming in as a producer. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he also said it's not necessary with a great band like that. And usually I composing...
What they say about the jazz record producer is that somebody that knows when to order the sandwiches.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I kind of feel like that I usually with my music, I know what I want.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
So,
but that's part of being a band leader and what makes the record so strong, like, and personal. That has a personality. That mm-hmm. It's all yours. I remember hearing this at some point in the production process. I mean, you were already well along the way mm-hmm. when you came to me and said that you had this project, and you know it already sounded great.
Oh yeah, thank you. Yeah,
came out well.
Yeah.
This song, Misconception. It sounds to me like maybe you started with a rhythmic basis of an idea
yeah.
as opposed to a melodic or harmonic.
Totally. I actually started it on the drums. It's one of the few songs that I composed on the drums. Usually I write everything on the piano. Mm-hmm. But this one I came up with just, I wanted to have a polyrhythm idea mm-hmm. and I studied with Tony Moreno at NYU.
Okay.
So he's really a polyrhythm god, let's say. And he always told me like, hey, if you want to check out, you know, if you want to really get into these things and grooves, you just have to write a song, because then you get to practice it every time you play the song. So wow. I was like kind of working.
Like, sounds like giant steps.
In a way, yeah, exactly. And I was working in 5/4, like all kind of polyrhythms in 5.
Yeah.
So I came up with this groove that combines 4 and 5, 4/5 basically. Mm-hmm. And it was so fun. I just couldn't stop. And this is how Misconception started.
Okay, here it is. So that's Misconception. You were just saying while we were listening to it, oh, Alex Goodman is one of my favorite guitar players in New York.
Totally. Yeah, and we actually met right after I moved there in 2012. We moved there at the same time. Mm-hmm. I went to NYU, he went to Manhattan School of Music. And since then we've been playing, and it's really,
in 2012?
Mm-hmm.
You were at, okay, so yeah, you're I came a to little New York. Younger than me, I guess.
A little. Yeah, and I brought Alex a couple times to Germany.
Uh-huh.
So
great.
We've been really consistently playing since then. And it's really, I mean, whenever I play, it's like, I feel like I know him for so long and I know exactly what he wants and or what he plays. And it's just perfect.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also the kind of player that you can, while you're writing, you can decide, okay, I know this playing really well, so I can decide how much I want to challenge or propose something different.
Totally. New. And I know that he's going to nail everything anyway, so it doesn't really matter what I'm going to write.
Well, he sounds really great with Rich Perry, too, mm-hmm. and the blend of the saxophone and the guitar. Have you been playing with Rich for a long time?
Yeah, actually also since I moved to New York. I met him through NYU. Mm-hmm. And we always had like a couple sessions there at NYU, and we played a show together at the Blue Note, at the Blue Note Brunch, where he put a band together. And yeah, I mean, he's such a unique player, and I love his sound. And so it was pretty, yeah, I mean, I was actually, when I formed the band, I was like, man, it would be amazing to have Rich, but he's never going to say yes, and he's like not going to have time. And
he's been busy for as long as I've known him.
Yeah, he's always busy. And I was just, okay, but let's ask him.
Good.
You know. And then he said yes. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. That was easy.
Great player and very funny guy.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Yeah,
amazing. So Johannes Felcher, the bass player, is the only musician here that I don't really know. Do you go back a ways? He's German also.
He's also German. And a funny thing, he's actually from the same hometown as I am. He's from Nuremberg. But we never met there because he left pretty early. He studied in Amsterdam. Hmm. And he's been living in New York for quite a while, actually. So we met in New York. But yeah, we've been playing pretty much also in Germany, of course, because he's in Germany a lot. Hmm. So yeah, it's great.
When you were growing up, did you go to the jazz club Nuremberg?
Jazz What's studio?
Is that the one that's like in a basement? Mm-hmm. And like a sort of a bunk, either a bunker or an old wine cellar or something?
Yeah. Exactly. Like in the Birdland? Close to the castle. No, yeah. Birdland is in Neuburg.
Neuburg.
It's like an hour and a half outside.
Right. So
in the countryside, Jazz Studio Nürnberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, I'm playing there a lot. Oh, it's good. Like my living room.
Good. Do you like playing there?
Yeah, a lot.
Great.
It's very nice. It's an old, very old club.
Very old club. Like one of the oldest clubs in Germany, isn't
it? Yeah, next to Neuburg, actually.
So did they let you come in when you were a little kid playing music?
Yeah,
you told me you started playing piano when you were five, so I'm
But I was, I grew up like half an hour outside of Nürnberg in a small town called Herzogenaurach.
Okay, I'm not going to try to pronounce that.
No, it's okay. But actually, some Americans know, like some people who are into sports, because it's the birth town of Adidas and Puma.
Okay.
That's where it's from. So, it's kind of funny. But I started playing classical music only. So I started on the piano. I did a bunch of competitions also on the classical piano. And then I started playing flute. And I was in a choir, had lessons in singing. And then I started playing drums very late. So I wasn't really in the Nürnberg scene. I only had 3 years of practicing before I went to Mannheim to study.
Wow.
So it was, very intense.
Did you, what made you decide to switch to the drums?
On the piano, although I was playing a lot of concerts and competitions, it felt forced. I was never happy being on stage. It was always like super stressful. I mean, of course, being in the classical scene, it's really competitive. And I was always so nervous and really sick in a way before I went on stage, and I never enjoyed it. Never. I mean, I did it because I was able to do it and I was in a way good, and I don't know. So I didn't really think about it. But then once I discovered the drums, actually during an exchange in France, my exchange student, he was playing drums. And the minute I sat on the drums, it was so much fun playing music.
Wow.
And it was like a totally different. It was like, wow. And also being on stage, it was so much fun being on stage and performing, like the complete opposite from the piano.
Right, and Schubert didn't write any music for drums.
Exactly.
So you said I had a little more freedom.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the independence that you have to develop to play classical piano helped you when you got behind the drum set?
I think so. Yeah, I was also dancing a lot when I was younger, so maybe that was also a component.
What kind of ballet or?
I started with ballet, but a lot of jazz dance and hip hop.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still do that?
Not as much as I would like to.
I don't know if there's room for it in the Jazz Studio Nuremberg.
Not really. But it was great to now actually work with dancers again. So
Yeah. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just think like the development from that. You said you were, 16 when you started playing drums. Mm-hmm. So from going from that to all of a sudden being a band leader.
I know.
Band leading from behind the drums is one of those legendary difficult things.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. But it's super fun. I mean, everything I do on the drums, I really enjoy. So it's, being a band leader, it's great because I can combine the piano and the drums, obviously, since I'm writing my music on the piano. I have that again because, when I started playing drums, I really took a long break from the piano. I didn't touch the piano. I was like really done with that. And writing music, it kind of brought me back the piano, which is nice. I enjoy it.
A piece like we heard, like Misconception, do you get the original idea at the piano?
Yeah. Like Misconception,
so
I started on the drums.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but all the other songs I write only on the piano.
You begin at the piano with a notebook and just generating your ideas like this. And
exactly.
So the fact that you have that classical facility in your background, it must help quite a bit.
Yeah, totally. And I usually can also play all the piano parts on the, like from my songs, I usually play them on
piano if you had to. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so Dan Tepfer, watch your back. To have that facility is kind of amazing and creates a lot of freedom. I mean, speaking of composing, and you were talking about, working with Stefan Harris and with Guillermo Klein, something that I found was that since I'm not a trained classical pianist, you know, I learned sort of rudimentary jazz piano when I was 14 or so. And it just, I had a really good teacher and I was lucky and it stayed with me. But at a certain point in my writing, I found that the lack of technical skill was holding me back as a composer. Because either because my hands would just go to the same shapes that they knew, or because I would get an idea and then not be able to execute it on the piano, so then I would not do it. And so it helped me a lot as a composer when I decided, okay, I'm not going to write at the piano anymore.
Oh, interesting.
So I write away from any instrument.
Oh.
And I'm wondering if, you know, some of the music on here sounds like you might have thought about it that way too.
Yeah, I mean, usually I start the idea on the piano, and then I also put most of it, most of the times I put it into Sibelius right away to have kind of a MIDI.
A sequencer version, yeah.
Exactly. And then often I play to it on the drums. And then I see, and then I kind of
Develop and being a drummer, that gives you a sense of the physicality of the idea.
Right, and usually it's
a different sort of way.
Yeah, and usually it's all about the forms or how the structure feels on the drums. That helps me a lot, playing it on the drums, that I don't get from the piano. From the piano, I'm like maybe too much into like, okay, where could this go harmonically or where's the melody going? But then once I step back and go to the drums, I get a more objective point of view to it. And then it helps me kind of shape the form of the song more.
That's so funny. So I almost never play along. I also work in Sibelius, but the original ideas are in a notebook and I try to keep them on paper as long as I can. And then when now I can't keep track of it anymore, then I put it in Sibelius. But I very rarely play along with the Sibelius sequence. But the one thing that I do, which is, sounds similar to the end, the last thing that you said, is that when the piece is almost finished, I print a part for myself as a trumpet player and put it on the music stand.
Yeah.
And then I see it and I'm a little bit divorced from being the composer.
Yeah.
And I put it on the stand like I would anyone else's piece and I immediately see things that need to be fixed.
Exactly.
Changed.
Yeah, exactly.
And that helps a lot.
That helps a lot.
Is that Metropolis Paradise, I mean, this is the title track to your new album. Does that describe the way you wrote this one too?
Yeah, totally. And also what I do, what I like to do is bringing in new music to sessions with different people. And then just try it out and see and record it and see how it feels while playing it with the band. And actually, Metropolis Paradise, I did that with a bunch of people. Because there was, in the beginning, there was something that didn't feel right. It was almost there, but I couldn't figure it out what it was that like. And then playing it at sessions, it really helped me, like listening back to it, it really helped me to like sort it out and change different things, yeah.
Yeah, I rely on my band to tell me what's wrong about my tunes. And it's happened more often than you would expect. But I think it's important to listen to the people that are playing your music, right?
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And let the thing develop organically. And again, one of the things that I really love about this record. So this is the title track, Metropolis Paradise. Thank you. Metropolis Paradise. Just quickly tell me about the title.
Well, it's I mean, it's just like a homage, if you say, to different places, like to my favorite cities. That's Oslo, New York, obviously, but then also Berlin, Cologne. Just like this feeling when you travel a lot, especially between Europe and the US, when you have jet lag. And I had that last year a lot, where I was in Europe only for a very short time, and then coming back here, and it's like so much going on that you don't really know what's going on or in what time zone you are, and and I love big cities and like the input you get there. Also, Paris is also another city I really love. So Metropolis Paradise is really just like my love to big cities.
Well, and you speak all those languages. You told me you speak Danish fluently and Norwegian.
Norwegian fluently, Danish got a little rusty.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. And English, of course, and German. And wow, that's wonderful. So before we played that track, we were talking about the composing process. And then while we were listening to the track, I was saying how stubborn I am that I don't want to work on Sibelius any more than I have to.
Right.
That I won't spend any time on my sequencer version. And then you were saying something really interesting, I thought, about how you prepare to bring the music to the band.
Yeah, because I guess I'm a little self-conscious with that, because I feel like there are some great players, you know, in my band, and I don't want to disappoint them or, you know, make them feel, oh, what is this, what she brought again, you know. So I really want to make sure that I like the music, and I put everything in there that I want. And then, yeah, finish it, really. Usually I bring tunes in that are more or less finished completely, yeah.
So you don't, after the first rehearsal, revise them? Well, it sounds like with some of them you do. You do sessions and then you go back. And
yeah, I do sessions with different people, but not really with my... I don't try them really out with my band. I go in and like kind of try it out with different people, like sessions, and just to get some ideas if I need to, or like for myself, basically, to hear them.
Yeah.
And then I finish them and then I bring it to my band. And sometimes I rework on things, small little sections, but usually it's pretty much done when I bring it to the band.
And do you feel like in some sense the process that has gone on was sort of about setting the table for them as improvisers?
Exactly.
Just creating a platform
where
they can
play,
take off and do their thing.
Totally.
Interesting. And you know, one of the things that I notice about the record too is that, and maybe it's a part coming out of this process, is that everything is very clear. I was going to say simple, but deceptively simple. But like the ideas are really distilled. There's a clarity to them. And maybe that's because you've gone over and over and played them and played them and played them and cut out the things that didn't need to be there.
Exactly, yeah. And also playing along with them on the drums. And yeah, as I said before, I feel like when I write, I pretty much know what I want at the end. And it just bothers me so much when I have something that I don't like, that I need to make it perfect in a way in order to really give it to my band.
Do you, these are some opinionated guys here. So when you do bring it in, do you get comments and feedback and you should change this and this is in the wrong octave and we should do it in this order? Or do you feel like pretty much what you feel is finished is ready and done?
Mostly it's done, yeah. Mostly it's like small little things with the bass. It's like, okay, maybe we should try it in this octave or like go back to the section. There are some things, but most of the time it's really, no, we play it and it's cool.
And there's a lot of counterpoint in your music. And that seems to just play itself. You don't come in and people are like, oh, this isn't working for me.
I mean, no, they usually don't say that. They say, oh, this is really hard.
Professional, too.
Professional, yeah, yeah. usually it takes a while to get the piece together because I know it doesn't sound like it, but actually the music is kind of difficult.
It can be
tricky to play. It's very tricky to play. So it usually takes a minute to get it together and play it slow and rehearse and have a couple shows actually to even get the piece together.
Great.
But yeah.
Do you rehearse at sound checks then, or do you actually schedule extra rehearsals
with the band? No, I schedule rehearsals. You do? Because you wouldn't be able to rehearse that at sound checks. No, it would not be.
Wow.
Yeah. You need
That's
definitely.
That's a luxury.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many bands I've been in where we only rehearsals we have ever had have been at sound checks.
I know, and I do that myself with all the side projects, actually. That's what really happened a lot. But with my music, I know that it won't work. And I know that, okay, if I bring it into sound check, I know it doesn't work. So we need the time at the rehearsal.
And then hear this one other piece that's called For a Good Day. Thank you. for a good day. And again, sorry, podcast listeners, the conversation goes on while we're listening to the tracks. And Marijke told me, oh, this is one song that I actually would just bring to a soundcheck.
Yeah, because it's fairly easy compared to the other music.
So it leads me to a question that I often ask myself. So it's an easy tune, simple. Did it also, was it easy to write? Did it just spill out of you?
It did.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it did. Yeah. Huh. But with most of my songs, I have this experience. If I really keep it and I like it, I usually have a big chunk that just comes out and then I keep working on it. But the main idea, usually it's pretty much there, pretty fast, but then like to finish up the piece, it takes a long time.
Yeah.
So in general, I would say I'm a really slow writer, although I have a bunch of ideas too. And the beginning is always really easy.
Hmm.
But then, you
know. The beginning of the piece itself, or yeah, the beginning of the writing.
The beginning of the piece.
So if when do you find that the first thing that you write usually ends up being the beginning of the piece?
Yeah. If I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually if I can keep working on it and make it into a piece, it's like that. Sometimes I have ideas that don't work at all, and then I'm like super frustrated, try to like force it into something and like make something out of it and, you know, spend so many hours on it. And at the end, it just doesn't work and I throw it out.
Wow.
Yeah. So usually it's a sign when the beginning is going really well. It's for me a sign that, okay, this is going to be another piece.
Yeah. Well, okay. That breaks my cardinal rule, which is never throw anything away.
See, Guillermo always tells me, don't be afraid of throwing anything away.
Good for him. Wow. That's fantastic. Yeah. I always feel like, I may not use this now. I may not even understand this idea now, but I'm not going to throw it away. It's just going to sit there, and then maybe someday I make something out of it.
Right. Which I always hope it's going to be like this.
You know, you write for a lot of different projects now. You're working with dance, and you're working with Rachel Therrien's band. And so I just always feel like you get an idea for a reason, and you may not know right now what that reason is, but
there's
something.
Yeah, that's true.
There's something.
Hmm.
Can be frustrating. But so you have all these tour dates coming up with your band from the record.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure you have other things going on as well.
Yeah. Yes. So
is the band from the album doing all these tour dates?
Yeah. Well, Glenn Zaleski is playing piano, not Dan Tapper.
Right.
Since
right.
he's really the main piano
His
player.
Elbow's better.
Well, he was in the band before, so
no,
and of course he's an amazing piano player.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a big dream of mine when I put out this record that I really bring everyone to Germany.
Great.
And
well, we are super happy to have it on Greenleaf Music.
Yeah, and I'm super happy to
the distribution here. Over there, they're also really excited. So
great.
Yeah,
and that was really my goal, to be able to bring them over.
Good.
And yeah, and then now I'm going to bring them over twice. So
and what's the tours. There's a New York performance too coming up, right?
Well, with this band, I mean, the CD release is going to be at the Jazz Gallery.
Mm-hmm. And do you know the date of that?
November 5th?
Well,
I have
it's,
to double
okay.
check.
It's sometime in November, so yeah.
Right.
Read this channel to find full information.
Yes, please check my website.
Which is?
MarijkeWiening.com.
Okay.
And you can also find anything on Facebook, of course.
Right.
Instagram.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Are you're touring with Rachel Therrien's band also during the same period?
We are touring in July. Mm-hmm. I just came back from a tour with her in May.
So this is for people listening to this show in some other universe at some other time, it's now 2019.
Yeah.
So Marijke said July.
July 2019.
By the time this episode comes out, you may have missed her touring with Rachel.
Yeah, maybe. But we'll be back for sure.
Great.
Yeah. So.
And you're going to continue living between New York and Germany?
Of course, as much as I can. Yeah, totally. It's
wonderful.
I enjoy being in Europe and also going around places there. it's important for me
too. There's a lot of opportunities there, and in the podcast extra, we'll talk about that.
Exactly.
But you know, I think trains is a big element.
Oh yeah.
Of why it's easier to get around.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, for example, now in July, my train back to Germany after mm-hmm. Rachel's tour is going from Paris mm-hmm. and I'm going to Cologne. So usually you would fly in a way, but, you know, then we figured out, okay, the train is only 3 hours.
Yeah,
going Paris, from Cologne Paris, Cologne. Easy. It's like, okay, well, I guess I do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really nice. Yeah,
it's just such a more pleasant trip.
And, oh, yeah.
And a smaller carbon footprint.
Yeah, totally.
So if we care about the environment.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Thank you so much for talking to me. I love this record, Metropolis Paradise, and I'm so excited about this coming out on Greenleaf. I wanted to play one more tune called Relations.
Yeah.
What do you, can you tell me about this?
I just wanted to have some sort of conversation between the front, means the tenor and guitar, mm-hmm. and the rhythm section. Also, Glenn likes to play over a bunch of chords, so there are a lot of chords to go over and in a medium
Glenn,
up
feeding
tempo.
Glenn's habit.
Feeding Glenn, yeah, exactly. Okay. Although he didn't record it, but he...
Well, I'm sure Dan likes to do that too.
Exactly, so. Yeah. But thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited.
It was great talking to you too. It's really inspiring and look forward to hearing more compositions and new pieces and...
Yeah. Thank
more
you.
Drums and wonderful.
Thank you so much.